See everyone, a tremendous yishkoach to everyone who comes out 4 days a week to learn. And halavai, we should be able to continue in person. But if not, this definitely provides a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to learn. What I want to discuss with us today is the smicha controversy that happened a number of years ago of 1538. And I've discussed it in various formats, but I want to give it as a formal shiur here. And obviously with last week's Parsha, Parsha's Pinchas, when we discussed the transference of power from Moshe to Yoshua, so the notion of smicha is certainly applicable. And there was a raging dispute in 1538 about granting smicha, which we'll see has several implications to us currently as well. So I'll start off with the following questions. Has anyone received lashes recently? Raise your hands. I should hope not. How about been put to death? No one? Everyone's still alive? You ever seen anyone put to death? No, we're good. How about any false prophets? Zaken Mamrim, Irani Dachas, any of those? So no, the reason is very simple, that we do not have a Sanhedrin nowadays. And because we do not have a Sanhedrin nowadays, so we're unable to give out any of these forms of punishment. However, there have been attempts throughout history to reinstate a formal Sanhedrin. So for example, in source number one, you see in 2005, there was an attempt to make Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz the Rosh, the Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin, and to reinstitute the Sanhedrin. It was, I believe they did in Tveria, and an entire effort was made to make Rabbi Steinsaltz the head of the Sanhedrin. If you look here in source number two, the Eima Banim Smecha Rabbi Tachtel, who of course changes his view on the land of Israel after the Holocaust, so he makes the following suggestion. He says that a Sanhedrin is critical. He says, "Rotzalomar bezed dechova Sanhedrin betur manhige ha'am hu la'ached es kol ha'am ha'israeli." That the purpose of a Sanhedrin is to unify the entire Jewish people. In the same way how the skin brings our entire body together, so too the Sanhedrin is the glue that keeps the entire Jewish people together. And therefore, says Rabbi Tachtel, wouldn't we be obligated to try to reinstitute the Sanhedrin if we could? He writes here on the following. He says very strong language. He says Va'atidin haroin litenes adin, that our leaders are going to have to make a din v'cheshbon al zayan she'ina mishtadlin la'ached es kol ama Yisraeli ba'aguda achas, that they are not doing more to try to unify the Jewish people. And of course here we're talking about reinstituting the Sanhedrin. So you have an attempt by Rabbi Steinsaltz, you have Rabbi Tachtel, Eima Banim Smecha, who makes the argument that for the unification purposes of the Jewish people, it is critically important that we have a Sanhedrin. You also have people who were very against the reinstitution of the Sanhedrin. So for example, Rabbi Menachem Kasher writes here in his Torah Shlema, he says, "V'hinei bin zmanenu anu acharei shenoz da menina Yisrael," after the establishment of the land of Israel, "Nitora Sheila Chidush Sanhedrin Ayide Harav Yehuda Maiman," right? Rav Yehuda Maiman, of course, was born in 1875. He was the leader of the religious Zionist movement. He was the founder of Mossad Rav Kook in 1937. He was one of the people who helped draft the direct Declaration of Independence. And so they asked him whether you should reinstitute the Sanhedrin. "V'ashkafas gedolei haTorah be'eretz Yisrael v'chutz la'aretz hi," and what was the psak halacha? "Yiyeh me'eze tam shiyeh," for whatever reason, "she'ein l'chadesh hasmicha," that we should not reinstitute smicha. "V'chol ma'ash nisbar le'el einu nogeya ke'es l'maisa," and anything we're going to talk about with regards to smicha, he says, is all pie in the sky, but it should not be halacha l'maisa. So Rav Menachem Kasher was asked, there was clearly a movement to reinstitute smicha, to reinstitute the Sanhedrin, to be able to give smicha, and we'll see in a second why those two are linked. And Rav Kasher says, for whatever reason, the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, for whatever reason, the Rabbanim in Chutz La'aretz were against it, opposed to reinstating the Sanhedrin. Rav Schechter quotes in his Be'ech Ve'atzon from Rabbi Soloveitchik, very strong language. He says that, the Heich Shesim Rabbeinu as a hesped shenasim p'tiros dodo agriz. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was giving a hesped for the Griz. "V'shamati shehizkira az Rabbeinu shedodo lo ishtadev b'hafganot uv'machlokes k'shebikshu liftoach birkas Sheyichya Me'orevis B'Yishalayim M'chil Shabbos. They wanted to open up swimming pools in mixed gender swimming pools on Shabbos, and the Griz chose not to speak out against it. De'elu Averus Pratiosein, because they're bad, but they're minor sins. In other words, they're specific sins. They're not sins that I'll call like medicines, which are going to transform the nature of Klal Yisrael. But says Rabbi Soloveitchik, V'davka b'shah shebikshu l'hakim Sanhedrin b'vinyan heichal Shlomo. It was only when there was a movement to reinstate the Sanhedrin in heichal Shlomo, alzeh hirish olamos levatel zinyan. There, right, what's hirish olamos means like he shook worlds, like almost like he caused an earthquake to prevent it. Kira bazet davar yoser chamor, because worse than mixed swimming, you know the old famous joke, because it's going to lead to mixed dancing. So here the Griz says, no, worse than mixed swimming on Shabbos is reinstating the Sanhedrin. Dahainu ziuf hatorah visilufa. Right? Ziuf hatorah. How do you translate ziuf hatorah? It's a desecration of Torah. It's an embarrassment of Torah. In other words, it's not one particular sin. One particular sin we, Klal Yisrael, could handle. But ziuf hatorah means that it's this like meta issue which could be catastrophic to the Jewish people. So you see here in sources 1, 2, 3, and 4, attempts throughout history to reinstate the Sanhedrin, and as we saw in source number 3, specifically the institution of smicha. We saw that Rabbi Steinsaltz attempted to. Ema banim smicha, Rabbi Teichtel was in favor of it because he thought that would be a unifying factor in Klal Yisrael. And then you have Rav Kasher and Rav Schechter, quoting Rabbi Soloveitchik, who are vehemently opposed. Again, think of those words by the Griz, that it's a ziuf hatorah, that it's a complete desecration of Torah. So what is real smicha? So we learned about in last week's parsha, for those who are paying attention, the transference of power from Moshe to Yoshua. And there, Vayomer Anai al Moshe, kach lechas Yoshua ben Nun, isha sheruach bo, v'samachta es yadcha alav. That you have to do a form of smicha. They have to do a form of smicha. What do we know about smicha? So the Rambam says in source number 7, that in order for there to be smicha, you need at least one member of the Sanhedrin that has real smicha. Now, in order for me to give smicha, or in order, let's say we were 50 people right now, in order for us to give smicha, one of us would have to have legitimate smicha. Says the Rambam here, Echad based in Gadol, Sanhedre Kitana, based in Shel Shlosha. Hold on, I'm just trying. Tzrichim Sheye, Kolachad Mehem Samach Mipi Samach. In other words, not like Moskowitz's Smicha, but they actually have to have Smicha directly from someone else who had Smicha. Moshe Rabbeinu Samach Yoshua, Moshe gave to Yoshua, Vechenav Sivim Zikanim, Moshe Rabbeinu Samcham, Mishari Salem Shechina. Again, this was the transference of our Mesorah from generation to generation, and those the Zakenim gave to others, and others gave to others. V'nimsu asmuchim ish mi pi ish, ad beis dino shel Yoshua, ad beis dino shel Moshe Rabbeinu. And we could trace it back, says the Rambam, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. V'echad anismach mi pi anasi, o mi pi echad, min asmuchim. And if I receive smicha directly from one of those people, not who has Moskowitz-style smicha, but real, legitimate smicha, then afiloya osan asamach b'sanhedrin me'olam. Right, as long as there's one person who gave me smicha, that in and of itself is enough for me to be able to have smicha. And we know that this chain of transition continued all the way through the times of the Sanhedrin. Now, how do we know that? We know that from source number 6, that the Gemara over here in Maseches Ksuvos tells us of a song that they used to sing when receiving smicha. A song that they used to sing when receiving smicha. And the Gemara in source number 8 tells us the very famous story of Rav Yehuda ben Bava. Rav Yehuda ben Bava, who I spoke about in my Parsha class on Friday, a very famous story of the Romans who had prohibited any forms of giving rabbinic ordination, of giving smicha. And what happened? As a result of that, so knas, you couldn't give punishment, you couldn't give lashes to anyone. So they wanted to reinstitute smicha. So what happened, says the Gemara, shepam achas gazru malchus arisha gzeir al Yisrael, shekol asomech yeherag, that anyone who gives smicha, they get killed. V'chol anismach yareg. And if you receive smicha, then you're also killed. And ve'ir shesomchim bo techarev, utchumin shesomchim bo yakro. Knows if Rabbi Goldberg gives smicha in Boker Raton, then the entire city is going to be wiped out, and the entire tchum is going to be wiped out. So they really wanted to make it clear that you could not give or receive smicha whatsoever. Okay, and the thought process obviously was that the Romans didn't just want to kill us physically, they wanted to destroy us spiritually. And the way you do that is by cutting off the Mesorah, by cutting off the tradition. Ma'asa Yehuda ben Beseir, Babava, sorry, what does Rav Yehuda ben Bava do? Halach v'yashav lo ben shnei harin agdolim, uben shnei aryaros gedolos, uben shnei tchumin Shabbos. So he goes in between the lines. I remember when I was a child, we went to Greenwich, England, where you can like be in like multiple different time zones at the same time. It's a lot of fun. Right, you're at zero, but right, it's like I remember you could put hands and feet, and then there's a place in Utah, New Mexico, you can do that, right? So this is what Rav Yehuda ben Bava did. He goes to a place that's in between everywhere, so the Romans can't kill cities. They could just hold him accountable. V'samach sham chamisha zakenim. And he ordains there five people. Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, Rav Shimon, Rav Yossi, Rav Elezer ben Shamua. And the Romans do not like this at all. How do the Romans kaven shiku oivehem bahem amar lahen banai rotsu? When the enemies, when the Romans discover what Rav Yehuda ben Bava does, so he tells these five students, he goes, "You run, at least save yourselves, and I'll take the hit." Amar lo Rebbe mate alecha. If we do that, what's going to happen to you? Amar lahen ari nimuta lifneim keeven shein lahovchim. I'm going to be there like a stone. I'm going to protect you. Amru lo zazu mishamat shenatsu bo shlosh meos lunvios shel barzel v'asu kivara. They, I mean, picture like a scene in a movie where they just like a machine gun right at him and he's punctured with 300 holes and Rav Yehuda ben Bava dies. Now, as I referenced in my Parsha class on Friday, Rabbi Soloveitchik in 1960 gave an address to smicha students where he wondered what gave Rav Yehuda ben Bava the permission to die for this purpose. Right, we know that when it comes to any mitzvahs in the Torah, it's yavor v'al yaharig, that I have to violate it. I can't be killed for it. With three exceptions, avodah zarah, gilyas raos, and shvichas damim. Asked Rabbi Soloveitchik, what gave Rav Yehuda ben Bava the right to die for the sake of smicha? Smicha, is that important? So what's the big deal? So these five rabbis wouldn't have gotten smicha. Who cares? What's the big deal? That's worth Rav Yehuda ben Bava dying over? So that's why I shared on Friday, a magnificent idea, and if it's a repetition, it's worth it. Rabbi Soloveitchik develops the idea that Rav Yehuda ben Bava wasn't dying to give smicha, but rather by giving smicha, he was giving himself eternality. Right? That when we preserve the Torah, and when we guarantee that it's transferred to another generation and not chas v'shalom stopped, dead in its tracks, we're not dying for that reason. We're actually giving ourselves nitzchias. We're giving ourselves eternality. Okay. So we know that real smicha is ish mi pi ish mi Moshe Rabbeinu, transferred down generation from Moshe Rabbeinu. We know that chain continues all the way to the time of the Amoraim, until this story essentially of Rav Yehuda ben Bava at some point where smicha stopped to exist. Now who cares if smicha exists or doesn't exist? What is the big deal? So as we referenced, the big deal is when it comes to dine knasos, when it comes to giving lashes, when it comes to putting people to death, when it comes to false prophets, when it comes to all of that. We'll see a little bit later on that there's actually another really important reason why you would need smicha and why you would need a Sanhedrin, but I'll get to that in just a little bit. Can smicha be reinstated? Right? Can smicha and the Sanhedrin, which I'm using somewhat interchangeably now, and I recognize that, because you need the Sanhedrin for smicha, as we'll see in a second, can they ever be reinstated? So the Rambam here in his Perish Mishnayos writes the following. Now, importantly, when did the Rambam write his Perish Mishnayos? How old was he? He was young, right? 17 or 18 years old. The Rambam was very young when he wrote his Perish Mishnayos, and the Mishnah Torah comes later on, so you have to remember that. And whenever you have a stira between the Perish Mishnayos and the Mishnah Torah, so that automatically gets your mind churning as to whether there was a philosophical shift by the Rambam, right? That the Rambam changed his mind is it's two sides of the coin. You really have to figure out exactly what the Rambam is talking about. Says the Rambam in his Perush Mishnayos, V'yirali. Now, V'yirali means what? V'yirali means not that like Shteit Negemara and Ksubas, right? Yirali means that it seems to me. In other words, the Rambam is giving his own chiddush here. And he recognizes, don't forget, the Rambam is a halachic work. So V'yirali, it seems to me, that's like what they teach you in public speaking you should never do. Never apologize before you want to sound authoritative. And if you do, you don't sound as authoritative. So the Rambam here says V'yirali, he's essentially qualifying his statement before he actually says it. And what does the Rambam say? Ki kishetieh haskama mikol hachachamim vehatalmidim lahakdim alem ish mini yeshiva v'yasimu oso larosh. Right, when everyone gets together and decides that they want to appoint one person as the head, ubilvad shezeyeh be'eretz Yisrael, so it has to be in Eretz Yisrael. So if you get all the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael to come together and to give someone smicha, then it would work. Kemo shezacharnu hine ha'ish ahu tiskayim lo yeshiva v'yasamach v'yismoch hu acher kein. And then that person can go and give smicha afterwards, mishirta. Shim lo tomar kein. The Rambam's very rational here. The Rambam says, because if you don't create a mechanism for smicha, then you're in a lot of problems. Why? Shim lo tomar kein. Because if you don't say that, Yefshar shetimsa based in Agadol Olam. How are you going to reinstate the Sanhedrin if you don't have anyone who has real, authentic smicha? Right? Every member of the Sanhedrin needs legitimate smicha. And Hashem guaranteed that when there is a Sanhedrin, then he will bring the geula, kmo shenemar. So first, what does Hashem return? The Sanhedrin. Acharechein, and afterwards, Yikarei lecha ira tzedek. Then, we'll usher in the Messianic era. V'zei yeh, below safek, says the Rambam, that's without a doubt. K'sheyikon HaKadosh Baruch Hu libos b'nei Adam v'tirbez chusam v'cheshkusam l'shem izbarach v'latorah. V'tegadel chachmasam lifnei ba hamashiach k'mo shizbar b'psukim harbe b'mikra. Okay? So says the Rambam, there's a very simple reason why we want to reinstate smicha. Because if we can reinstitute smicha, then we can also reinstitute the Sanhedrin, which is the first step in the bringing of Mashiach. So the Rambam says, you want Mashiach? We're in the 3 weeks right now. You want Mashiach? There's a very simple way. And that is figure out a way to get the Sanhedrin. And you can't have a Sanhedrin unless you have real smicha. So what's the only way to get real smicha, says the Rambam? It's very simple. You need all of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael to rally around one rabbi. Now I ask you, how easy is that to do? It sounds so simple. Find every rabbi in the land of Israel to rally around one person and to grant that person smicha. Simple. Let's pick the person. Right? That's really not. But my point is no matter who you pick, you're not going to rally around everyone. Now the Rambam makes this point elsewhere. He mails it elsewhere in the Perush Mishnayos. I don't need to read it to you, but it's a very similar language to what he said previously. Now what's important is the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. I mean Hilchos Mishnah Torah. In Mishnah Torah, Hilchos Sanhedrin, the Rambam writes the following. He says, Harei Shelo Hayaber. Now again, Perush Mishnayos was written before the Mishnah Torah. So this is afterwards. The Rambam is older and wiser. And listen to what he says. Harei shelo haya be'eretz Yisrael ela samach echad moshev shnayim betzido v'samach shivim ke'echad. Okay, dot, dot, dot. Says the Rambam, near and li. It appears to me that same language of hedging. Hadvarim shimiskimu kol hachachamim she'be'eretz Yisrael, that if all of the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael get together, limnos dayanim v'lismo chosam, and want to give one person or a group of people smicha, harei elu smuchin. That would constitute real, legitimate, bona fide smicha. V'yesh lehen ladun dino knosos v'yishlam l'smoch acherim. And then if you do that to one person or group of people, they can give smicha to others, and they can do dinei knasos. It's amazing. They can give lashes, they can put people to death, they can destroy an ir nidachas, right? Brilliant. Shkoyach. All you need is kol hachacham shever Yisrael, all of the rabbis in Israel to get together. Then says the Rambam, im kein, lama yuchacham mitzdarim al smicha, kedei shelo yivatlu dinei knasos miYisrael. Right, the reason why the rabbis were so worried about smicha is because they wanted to institute dinei knasos. They wanted to be able to give out knas. Lefisha Yisrael mefuzarim, v'efshar sheyaskimu kulam. And what was the problem, says Rambam? This is very important. He says, because Jews were so spread out, there you simply couldn't get consensus. Right? That's the Rambam's reasoning for why this wasn't done earlier. Not that it couldn't be done earlier. But the reason why it wasn't done earlier is because of logistical issues. Don't forget, nowadays we have text messages and WhatsApp and Twitter and Facebook and all these wonderful things. Back then, it was much harder to reach every rabbi in Eretz Yisrael. Right? You had to get on your donkey, saddle up your horse, and you had to travel around Eretz Yisrael, finding every single rabbi to agree on one rabbi. That's very hard, says the Rambam. V'im hayasham samach mi pisamach, eino tzarech das kulam eladan dinei knasos l'chol sherei nismach mi pei beis din. And if you find one guy, that's enough for dinei knas. V'hadavar tzarech hechra, which means what? It means, like, we need to look into this a little bit more. I'm not 100% sure about this. That's what the Rambam says. Now, what is the Rambam saying I'm not 100% sure on? Because the Rambam is saying several statements. First, he says that if you get the scum of all the Jews, the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael. Then he says this statement, Avim hayasham samach mi pisamach, that if there's a guy who has legitimate smicha, then he can do knas, even if everyone else doesn't. What is the Rambam saying? V'adavar tzarech hechra. Right, in English, it's called a modifier. Right? We have this all the time. Misplaced modifiers. Right? Where what I'm modifying doesn't necessarily connect with what came previously. Okay? It's the same way, like, I'll give you an example. I went to the pool where it was drinking, or where I was drinking. I know the pool wasn't drinking, I was drinking. So you have to modify that. That was a terrible example, but you know what I'm talking about, right? You have to modify it properly. So when the Rambam says, V'adavar tzarech hechra, what is it modifying? Is it modifying what came right before it? That the notion of, that if one person has smicha, that's fine. Or was he modifying the whole notion that if all the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael come together, they can give smicha? Says the Kesef Mishnah, he says, I'll point you out even better. He says, "Beperish haMishnah, Kasav Kain, Ela Shesham Kasav Adavar Stam, Vikan Kasav VeAdarach Sarich Hechra." When the Rambam quoted this halacha all the way up here in his Perish Mishnayos, did you see the words VeAdavar Sarich Hechra anywhere? Did you see the Rambam hedge anywhere? Did the Rambam offer any qualifying statements? Not at all. The Rambam seemed very confident in what he was saying. Says the Kesef Mishnah, it's only in the Mishnah Torah where the Rambam sees to hedge his bet a little bit more with this notion of V'adavar tzarech hechra. Right, thank you, Ira, for a much better example than mine. I saw the bus running down the street, right? The bus wasn't running down the street. I was running down the street. I just happened to see a bus while I was running. So it should have said, while running down the street, I saw a bus or something like that. Okay, but thank you. So that's what the Rambam was talking about. So you have here this bombshell of a Rambam that's filled with a multitude of questions. Because the Rambam drops a bombshell that says that if you can get all of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael to come together and to give smicha to a person, bada bing, bada boom, we could have smicha. And if we have smicha, then we have a Sanhedrin. If we have a Sanhedrin, we could have Mashiach. Shkoyach, we have 2.5 weeks, Chevra. Let's get it together. But now we have a whole slew of questions. Because as the Kesef Mishnah points out, when the Rambam quotes it as halacha in the Mishnah Torah, he seems to qualify it. Now, A, we don't know what he's qualifying. B, if he's qualifying our halacha, that's a real big problem. Because why does the Rambam qualify it? Is he qualifying it because he got older and realized that it's wrong? Did someone... We have no idea why the Rambam qualified it. So that's a problem when you're paskening halacha. Now, all of this was largely theoretical. It was good lumdus until the year 1538. In 1538, there's a rabbi by the name of Rav Yaakov Beirav, who decides that he is going to receive smicha. And so 25 rabbis in Tzfat get together, and they unanimously decide that they are going to reinstitute, not fake smicha, but real smicha. And the first one that they ordain is this Rabbi Yaakov Beirav, who I'm going to refer to as the Ma'ari Beirav. They gave smicha to other people as well, namely Rav Yosef Karo receives real smicha, the Alshich, Rav Chaim Vital, right, Rav Yoshia Pinto. There are a number of very prestigious Rabbanim who receive legitimate smicha in Sfat in the year 1538. Right? Think about it. Rav Yosef Karo, not a lightweight. Now, what do they have to do in order to get this? So we know by now that they need all of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael to be able to rally around a group of Rabbanim to give them smicha. So they send a letter. They send a letter to Rav Levi ben Habib, otherwise known as the Maral Bach, or referred to as now, who is a Rav in Yerushalayim. Now, a little bit of background. Rav Yaakov Beirav is born in 1474 in Toledo. He was a Rav in Algeria, where he had to flee in 1492. First, he comes in 1522 to Yerushalayim. He has to leave to go to Egypt because of financial reasons, and he comes back and settles in Tzfat. The Maral Bach, those are our two big people. Remember those names, Rav Yaakov Beirav and the Maral Bach, Rav Levi ben Habib. He's born in Zamora, Spain in 1480. He has to convert to Christianity for a year before fleeing, ends up in Yerushalayim in 1522, where he writes this Kuntres HaSmicha, which is detailing his entire conversation with Rav Yaakov Beirav. Now, what happens exactly? In 1538, Rav Yaakov Beirav convenes this group of rabbis, these 25 rabbis in Tzfat, and he introduces his plan based on the Rambam that you and I just learned to receive real smicha. They give the people smicha, and then they send an individual by the name of Shlomo Hazan, to Yerushalayim, to the Maral Bach, to tell him that Rav Yaakov Beirav was declared the head of the Sanhedrin. Now, what's the problem? So Rav Yaakov Beirav gets up on Shabbos, and to much fanfare and excitement, he tells the main shul in Tzfat about his plan. Now let's pause here. What is the problem with Rav Yaakov Beirav's decision? What doesn't he include? He doesn't include the rabbis of Yerushalayim. Right? He unilaterally, essentially, based on the Rabbanim in Tzfat, gets together and decides that they are going to institute real bona fide smicha. So if you see here, this is in the Shail Sechuvos Maral Bach, he says, Beiru l'chacham ha-shalem ma-rav Yaakov Beirav, u-peiru so'al reshe gelusa dedava, li'oso samach, right? They wanted to give him real smicha. V'rosh yeshiva rebi tikru havei v'cholo san asher yira be'inav lismoch ha-yada l'shono aleim, v'hayayim be'in ha-kosa rasha yuva lifneim v'yitzuvu l'shlucham la-koso. Right? They wanted to give malchus. Now, why do they want to give malchus? Now, I don't know this for real, but I do know that it's written in the history of the Jews from greats, the following suggestion, that the reason why he wanted to give malchus is because of the Jews from Spain, the Maranos, who had converted to Christianity and wanted to do tshuva. They wanted to do tshuva. Says greats here, Beirav maintained that such forgiveness could be granted them only upon submitting the legally prescribed punishment of 39 lashes. But as this punishment could be administered only by a legally ordained tribunal, what we'll call Sanhedrin, the necessity for the restoration of the ordination was clear. Rav Levi ben Habib, who is the Maral Bach, could easily refute such an argument. In addition, adduced many sophistries against Beirav's position. So again, according to greats, the reason why, and it makes sense if you think about it, right? The Jews are thrown out in 1492. This is about 40 years later, about 40 years later. Right? So there was a need to achieve teshuva from these Maranos. Now, When the Marabach gets this, he is, let's just say, not so happy. He writes a letter back to Rav Yaakov Beirav, where he writes it together with a colleague, Rav Moshe DeCastro, and they are not so happy. Now, this alone should make you realize that it's a problem for the smicha, because the Rambam is explicit that who needs to give smicha? All of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael. And here you have the rabbis in Yerushalayim that are against what the rabbis in Tzfat tried to accomplish, which would essentially annul everything they were trying to do. This is an English translation of the Marabach. It is Kuntras HaSmicha. He says, "And we are not reed cutters in the pond." In other words, that's like rabbinic trash talking. Like, who do you think I am that you ignored? I'm not a nobody that you ignored me from the conversation. Apart from the sacredness of the location, right? In other words, let alone the fact that I'm in Yerushalayim, and that alone should give me the kedusha, the dignity that you should not have made this decision without consulting me first. The rabbi wrote that they had agreed to send it to us for our approval through the sacred emissary of the great Rav Shlomo Chazan, so that we will agree to their initiative. After asking forgiveness from their eminence, it seems that in this manner they have deviated from the ways of ethics and righteousness that is fitting for them. For it is inappropriate to do an action and sign their names as affirmation without knowing what we have to say on the matter after they present their proofs. In English, we have a phrase for this. It's called do now, apologize later. We do it all the time. Sometimes it's easier to just do something, and when you get called out, you say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize. Right? So the Marabach is calling out Rav Yaakov Beirav, the Mari Beirav, and saying, like, you didn't at least show us the kavod of asking our permission first. You simply did it and thought you could apologize later. That doesn't seem, and you see the dig at it, right? People that are such tzaddikim would never do something like this. What's he, of course, calling into question? He's calling into question the tzidkus of Rav Yaakov Beirav, right? And then he says, I thought to give him the benefit of the doubt. He learned the Daf Yomi from 2 days ago. So he knows about Dan Lekav Zchut. And say that they only had holy intentions, right? Ve'ola hayal dati lilmor alea schos al zeh. Ve'lomar shalios kavanasan l'shmi. L'maher la'asika tachlis achashav aniskar. Maybe they were just trying to do it quickly because they were in a rush. And that's why they figured they would ask later. He says, lo ro laharich einyan v'asu ma'ase kvidatim b'cheshvam. Maybe they just assumed that we would go against. But he says, avaleinu maspik, that's not good enough. Ubimachil mechvod, right? In other words, that's a nice way of saying with all due respect. Anytime in the English when someone says with all due respect, you know what you're about to get? No respect at all. Okay, so mechil kvodo means that I don't have so much kavod for you. Im lekach kavano, lo heitivu leros v'adarabah. Right, and as if that's the case, that was their intention, then it wasn't done so appropriately. They didn't show us the proper kavod that they should have. What should they have done, he says here in the English, and again, you could read the Hebrew. The correct procedure would have been that they inform us of their logic with a proof, and if we had some doubt about the proof, we would tell them. In other words, that's how Rabbanim discuss things. There's a back and forth. If they ordain people after that against their wishes, there could be an argument made that they did so with our approval, as they are the majority, in his biblical manner, to follow the majority. In other words, maybe you say, Acharei Ram Lahatos. But that's not true. After all this is found in the Rambam in his Mishnah Torah, where he says, right, that all of the sages have to agree. Remember, that was the language. That clearly does not mean each and every one of them, but rather a significant majority. Says the Marabach, even if you want to argue, right, you want to have a Yirsha cup, and say what the Rambam said, all rabbis have to agree. What he really meant is that the majority of rabbis agree. And because we hold that Rubo Kakulo, Acharei Rab Lahato, so once you have 51%, that's everyone. Says the Marabach, no, you need to do a lot better than 25 rabbis in Tzfat. But if that agreement comes about without any deliberation on the part of everyone, then it is not an approval at all. He says, you can only do Acharei Rab Lahatos if you consulted the rest of the people, right? Rabbi Goldberg we can't get the BRS rabbis together and say, you know what, we're instituting for Boker Ton the following decree, everyone else has to agree Acharei Rab Lahatos. But you need at least to give the other Rabbanim a chance, the give and take. He says, but if that agreement comes about without any deliberation, that is not approval at all, because perhaps if the members of the majority heard the claims of the minority, they would have been swayed as well and would recount their approval. So you sense very quickly from the words of the Marabach that he's not thrilled that Rav Yaakov Bei Rav made this decision without consulting him whatsoever. And so therefore he continues in source number 8. It appears to me that the master was not speaking about the rabbis in his generation, because we have rabbis in the generation who are well equipped to understand the words of our sages that are written in the books, and specifically the complete master they chose to head the Sfat. However, even with this, one must have, listen to this, I'm going to read in Hebrew because it's like sharp. Od tzarech im ze bekiyus gadol me'od. You need to have a lot of Torah knowledge. In other words, even if we are going to give someone smicha, guy's got to be a pretty big Talmud Chacham. Umishi yismane b'minui kazeh kadoshu. Right? And he has to be like a real tzaddik. And he has to be oker harim v'sinai. He has to have like the most amazingly sharp mind. Kiesh kama dinim mischadish b'chol yom lo yuchal ish lefsok b'hem adin im lo mikoach ezeh. Right? He needs to like really be a Talmud Chacham. Ma'aseh matan shebo b'talmud v'sifrei p'sod poskim lo nimsu klal. Right? He says, in our generation, you don't find a person like that at all. So that is like a total dig at Rav Yaakov Bei Rav. Because what's the Marabach? What's Rav Levi Ben Chabib saying? He's saying, first of all, what they did was incorrect. And it likely goes against the Rambam. And even if you want to argue that Achrei Rab Lahatos, he says you would only appoint a Rosh Sanhedrin, a guy who is like the biggest Talmud Chacham the world ever knew. And we don't actually have someone in our generation who's like that. Who's that a dig at? That's a dig at Rav Yaakov Bei Rav. Because Rav Yaakov Bei Rav gets up there and appoints himself as the Rosh Sanhedrin as having smicha. Marabach says, we don't really have someone like that in our generation who knows so much Torah. Now, Rav Yaakov Bei Rav responds. And he responds as follows. He says, to Mahasi Alav, I'm very surprised by that. I'm shocked by his words. Right? Why? Miyoma garish v'ashmad shebesarav la'olam, from the days of the expulsion of Spain, hayiti mora haros b'Yisrael. I've always been viewed as a big Talmud Chacham. V'rav l'chameshes alpayim batim yudim minas. Right now, 5,000 families look to me for halachic guidance. Right? K'mefursamim l'chol la'olam v'ayisi az ben yurches shanim. I was only 18 years old. V'adayin lo'isi b'chasim asakein. I didn't even have a beard, he says. He says, I went hungry, I went thirsty, I did whatever I could to walk in the way of Hashem. All these people were looking at me as a big rabbi. He said, and therefore I know that certainly from the side of the Holy Ones, anyone who hears will say that I was an appropriate candidate. So you see, there's like this like power play right here between Rav Yaakov Bei Rav, who's arguing, I understand, when I was in Spain, I had a community of 5,000 people, everyone was looking at me, I was a big Talmud Chacham. You have the Marabach who's looking, he says, I don't know, even if we're going to appoint someone who's the Rosh Sanhedrin, he's got to be a big Talmud Chacham. I don't know anyone in our generation who's like that. So you see that this wasn't just any debate. This was a vociferous debate. This was a passionate debate, back and forth, between the two parties. Marabach responds, he says, I would thank his great name when I had the honor to write the great city of Saloniki. He gave it my heart and desire to come here to Yerushalayim. He says, I came here to Yerushalayim, and I made it my home for so many years. And Hashem did so kindly. First, right, why? Was in the days when the words of those who were fools and told slanderous words, right, were not that I was here in Yerushalayim and could calm the residents, this city would be devoid of Jews to the point that even a quorum of men would not remain. Shocking to think what Yerushalayim was like. But he says, the second reason Hashem was good to me that he brought me to Yerushalayim was so that I could combat what the rabbis of Tzfat are trying to do. Right? I, Baruch Hashem, I came to Yerushalayim because by being in Yerushalayim I was able to ensure that those rabbis in Tzfat were unsuccessful in what it is that they were trying to do. And so you see, again, this is a very lengthy kuntras. But you see the back and forth between Rav Yaakov Bei Rav on the one hand and the Marabach on the other hand. what ultimately happens. So what ultimately happens is that, where do I have this? Yeah, that a decision was made to hold off on granting smicha until they would find a suitable candidate. Again, there's the arguments back and forth. Ultimately, Rav Yaakov Beirav has to leave Eretz Yisrael, but not before ordaining other people. And he compares himself, listen to this, he compares himself to Rav Yehuda ben Bava. Remember, Yehuda ben Bava takes the 300 arrows just to be able to give smicha. Rav Yaakov Beirav says, you could hit me with any arrows you want. Spread slander around me. But I'm doing the right thing. I'm no different than Rav Yehuda ben Bava. And the Marbach goes crazy at that association. He says, are you out of your mind? He says, Rav Yaakov Beirav left Eretz Yisrael because of financial reasons, not because he was Rav Yehuda ben Bava who got killed for the sake. And they go back and forth. Ultimately, they consult with the Radbaz. The Radbaz, of course, is living in Egypt, so to the south of there. And the Radbaz writes the following, and I'm going to read it, even though it's a little bit lengthy, because I think it's very powerful. He says, "Alashon zeh, hiskimu samchu chachmei tzfas, v'hagadosh v'hem lismoch smuchim ladon dino knasos." Based on this Rambam, he says, there were those who wanted to reinstate the notion of smicha. V'lo ayla biyadam, and they were not able to. L'fisha chacham shabi yushalayim lo iskim mahem. Now you and I know the backdrop to this Radbaz now. Right? We know the backdrop. That it was Rav Yaakov Beirav who tried to do it. And the Marabach, who's the Gadol Shabahem in Yushalayim, the Chacham in Yushalayim, who prevents that from happening. Vishalu espi ba'odi b'mitzrayim, v'espi chaverai v'lo iskamnu. They asked us in Egypt and elsewhere, and we said, it's not a good idea. Why? V'ani erachti ba'osa tshuva levatel daitem, v'shalo diktiklu yafa b'loshon rabbeinu. He says they didn't read the Rambam carefully. Chad, number one. Shem Chashu, Shema Shekasu Rabbeinu V'adavar Tzara Checha. Remember, that was the end of the Rambam. Those three critical words, the Rambam's qualifying statement. He says, they wanted to argue, Kai Lamai Des Salik Minei, Vima Yesham Samach Mi Pi Samach. Rav Yaakov Beirav wanted to argue that when the Rambam hesitates, he was only hesitating about the last three lines of the Rambam Mishnah Torah. That if there's one person with smicha, that's enough to have give kenasos, even if everyone else doesn't have. Says the Radbaz, that's not the case at all. He says, there's no debate about that at all. Right? He proves from Yehuda ben Bava. He says, Hacha ba'al chadesh, shim yesh samach mi pisamach, ein sarach das chach me'er Yisrael, ela dan dine knasos, v'davar baruhu, v'ein sarach echra. He said, that's obvious halacha. That's not what the Rambam was telling us. Ela al korchach ma'ashe kasav, v'davar sarach echra, says the Radbaz. Woe is the Rambam wavering about? Areshakai, the first part, our part, the notion that if all of the Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael get together, v'kevan shu atzmo lo pshitalei, eich nase anachnu maise. And if the Rambam himself wasn't so convinced, then how can we paskin like him? Don't forget, the Rambam wasn't saying this halach l'mosh mi-sinai. The Rambam says, v'nir ali, he says, this makes sense to me logically, but I'm not really sure. Says the Radbaz, if that's how the Rambam felt about it, then certainly you and I shouldn't paskin like that. Vitu, he says, the Rambam says that the reason why they didn't do it is because they were mifuzarim. They were spread around Eretz Yisrael. Umabekach, he says, what are you talking about? Velo be'Eretz Yisrael, krovim zeh lazeh. In the land of Israel, they were pretty close to each other. Vayu l'cholim l'haskima, they were able to get consensus, al hasmicha, ayidei shluchim, o ayidei igeros. Right? They had letters. You could have sent people on their horses and, right, the messengers. Elamayis l'chalameymar, sheyitzrichan lios kulam b'ma'amar echad v'ayirachok l'kitzvam ho'ol v'eim v'fuzarim. Right? Halamadata da'afilu l'ma'at sheyvinu b'divar rabbeinu ayitzarach shekol chachmei Yisrael yiyu b'ma'amar echad. That would imply, according to the Rambam, that all the Rabbanim need to be in one place, which obviously we don't have, so we can't do it. Ve'od nira, sheyitzarach ha'nismach Roy Lahoros Bechola Torakula. This was the Marabach's response. He said, the guy who's we're going to be smicha to needs, like, Kola Torakula, pin drop, pin test to the nth degree. V'rachok be'inai sheish b'dor hazeh misha roy lahoros bechola torakula. He says, I don't believe that there's a Jew in our generation that Mamish knows Kol HaTorah Kula. We throw that around. Shechter knows Kol HaTorah Kula. Rasher Weiss knows Kol HaTorah Kula. Says the Radbaz, to know Kol HaTorah Kula is like, that's really hard. He says, I doubt that anyone in the 16th century had Kol HaTorah Kula. Va'od, and furthermore, he says, Sha'raya Shakasa Rabbeinu Beferish, L'davra Inu Roya Lismo Chalev, is it, right, the argument that the Rambam made. Remember, what did the Rambam say in the Mishnah Torah? Why do we need smicha? We need smicha for a Sanhedrin. And why do we need a Sanhedrin? Because without a Sanhedrin, you can't have Mashiach. So in order to have Mashiach, we need a Sanhedrin. In order to have Sanhedrin, we need smicha. Must be we have it. Says the Radbaz. I don't understand that, he says. Umi Yitain, which is a nice way of saying, I don't understand. V'ha'edash ha'ri Eliyahu ba'alifnei Mashiach. Because Eliyahu Anavi is going to come before Mashiach. Right? V'ha'rehu samach, he had smicha. V'yismuch acherim, he can give smicha to other people. Lifnei bo Mashiach. So if Eliyahu is going to come, let Eliyahu give smicha to people. V'tu divnei ruvein asidin lavo, v'lasos milchamos, lifnei bo melech Mashiach. So too, the children of Ruvein are going to come to wage war before Mashiach. Uman leimalan shelo yeh, b'hem samach mipi samach. Maybe one of the children of Ruvein has smicha. And they'll give smicha to others. And also, sheyomru midrashos, shemashiach yizgale begalil v'yachzer v'yizkase, uman leimalan shelo yismoch beizdin bizman sheyizgale b'tchila. V'efshar shemitok kushios eilev zulasan lo samach amash kasev perish mishnayos. Right? Maybe therefore, because Eliyahu can come, because descendants of Reuven can come, because no one's qualified, so maybe, right, maybe the Rambam isn't so correct. Knows maybe there's a way to have Mashiach even without being able to give smicha, even without a Sanhedrin. So this was the raging dispute that existed in the 1538 between the rabbis of Tzfat and the rabbis of Yerushalayim. I'm going to summarize now and then turn over to Rabbi Volovsky. Maybe we'll finish up a little bit more of the history next week. But what are the halachic arguments? So the halachic arguments are fourfold. And I'm going to summarize them for you right now. Number one is, did the Rambam retract what he wrote in his Perish Mishnayos? Right? When he writes the Perish Mishnayos, he seems very confident. Does he retract it when he writes a more hesitant comment in the Mishnah Torah? When he wrote the Mishnah Torah, was he undoing, was he retracting what he wrote in Perish Mishnayos? So Rav Yaakov Beirav uses that hesitancy in not to refer to the fact that you need all of the Rabbanim together, but he refers to that hesitancy that the Beis Din needs three ordained members, or if one is only enough. That's what the Rambam was hesitating about, says Rav Yaakov Beirav. The Marabach, the Radbaz, says, no, he was hesitating about our whole sugya, whether you need all of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael or not. That was number one. Number two, what's the point of an ordained Beis Din? Rav Yaakov Beirav said that the point of an ordained Beis Din is to give Malkus. The Marabach says, you're going to give Malkus? Right? Whatever happened to Asra? Whatever happened to Edim? You can't just give out Malkus. You need to have a proper infrastructure in place to be able to give out Malkus. Number three, and again, I'm recounting these for you because we didn't read the entire Kuntras inside, but the Marabach says, you know what I'm worried about? That if we bring back smicha, it's going to be used improperly. We're going to reinstitute Kiddush HaChodesh, do away with Yontif Sheni, wreak havoc on the calendar, right? You can't just willy-nilly come along and decide that we're going to recreate smicha. There are enormous consequences with bringing back smicha. We have to think those through a little bit. Rabbi Yaakov Beirav says, no, I'm not interested in that at all. All I want to give is malchus. You have to trust me. I'm a good guy. Of course, as you can see by their comments back and forth, and I gave you a little bit of a glimpse into it, wasn't a whole lot of trust back and forth. And lastly, and perhaps most importantly, right, the Nekudas HaMachlokes, what were they arguing about, was does all really mean all? When the Rambam says that you need all of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, does all really mean all? Rav Yaakov Beirav says, no. Since Tzfat was the majority of the Jews, then majority rules. And as long as the Rabbanim of Tzfat have consensus, then everyone else has to come along. The Rambach says, yeah, that's only if the few were included in that decision-making process, not if you made the decision and contacted us afterwards. Then it doesn't count at all. So those are the four essential machlokas, four prong machlokas that existed about this smicha controversy in 1538. What we'll touch upon a little bit next week is, I'd say, like an outgrowth of that, which is some interesting historical discussion about why specifically in 1538 this exploded as such an important conversation. Oftentimes, when you know the history behind the halachic decisions that were being made, it gives you a little bit of an insight into why there was such passion and vitriol, essentially, going back and forth. So we'll continue that next week, but until then, I want to